Sexy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I am so happy to welcome today Steve Anderson to talk about his latest book, Lines of Deception. It's a fantastic book, and there's a lot of story behind this book. Hi, Steve. Are you there?
I am. Thanks for having me today.
I so enjoy your books. This one is particularly fun for me. It reminds me of a lot of things in my life. I've always had a great interest in the Cold War period, particularly when you think about it today, so many of the problems we have today can be traced back to then.
Absolutely. It's a seminal period for all sorts of things, and that we could spend a whole hour talking about those.
With this war in Europe again, which I didn't envision it, I spent so much time in Germany. I enjoyed getting back into Vienna with this book. I don't know. I didn't think this would happen. Did you?
No, absolutely not. When I research these type of things, they always seem to me far back in the past and the things that could never happen again. And I think that's why they were sort of exotic to me. And it is a bit shocking to see it all coming back around. I mean, land war in Europe, that's a frightening prospect for sure.
This book, of course, starts off in West Germany in 1949. You can explain about the Kasper brothers, because I remember the first one, which I read, was The Losing Role. And that was the Kasper brothers that was set in 1944 in the midst of the Battle of the Bulge. I particularly remember that because my father was in the Battle of the Bulge.
Oh, really?
Yes. I have walked the Arden Forest many times. I actually tried to trace his footsteps as far as he could remember them. So I was there through that battle. And so when I read The Losing Role, The Losing Role is, I think that explains so much about the Kasper brothers, but I'll let you explain who the Kasper brothers are. I think the entire premise is intriguing. So let's talk about the Kasper brothers.
Yeah, sure. First, I want to ask you, did your father happen to encounter any of those infamous Germans in American uniforms speaking English?
Yes, he did. Not many people know where their father was, so many years ago. But I actually know his footsteps as that horrible, horrible period started. The Battle of the Bulge, and so many people don't remember, and the recent anniversary, people didn't even talk about it on the news. But it was a horrible event. And my father, I know where he was on Christmas Eve, 1944, because his feet were frozen. Prior to that, before the battle started, he actually saw Marlene Dietrich. There are only two great things that happened to him during the war. He saw her, and he got to talk to Omar Bradley. And those were the only two things he'd ever talk about. And other than the fact that his feet hurt all of his life, he didn't want to talk about it.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting. Those are some of the same footsteps in the first book of the series. I would love to talk to you more about that. That's interesting, but I should probably talk about the book. The Losing Role takes place in the Battle of the Bulge, and the character Max Kasper features in Lines of Deception. In the first book, he is this entertainer. He just wants to love life and entertain, and he's unfortunately drafted into this desperate mission that was a real-life thing where the SS recruited but also forced some Germans who spoke English to operate behind the U.S. lines during the Battle of the Bulge, and they weren't really well prepared for it. Most of them didn't speak very good English. A lot of them were captured pretty much immediately. A lot of them just died, and some of them just disappeared. And that's the story of Max in The Losing Role, and he goes through some horrible things. Meanwhile, his brother Harry is growing up in America because the family had emigrated to America and Max had stayed behind in Germany. So in the second book, Liberated, Harry is sort of this naive American occupation officer who arrives in Germany and thinks he's going to change the world. But what he finds out is very quickly that it's a lot more complicated than that, and he basically has to expose a plundering racket that's being run by his fellow American officers. And so they've been separated by war, these two brothers. You know, they're different in many ways. But in the third book, Lost Kin, which is set in 1946 Munich, the brothers are finally reunited, and Harry helps sort of rehabilitate Max in that they join together in this effort to free Cossack refugees that are hiding from the Soviets, because if they get sent to the Soviets, then they will probably be sent to gulags or executed. So they both join together to do some good. Now they're forced to reunite again, and this time it's Max who is going to attempt to save Harry. He ventures in many spots behind the Iron Curtain to find out where Harry is and what he's doing, and hopefully redeem himself as well.
And of course, this one is called Lines of Deception. There's nobody better at writing about deception than you. You really capture, well, first of all, of course, your books are very atmospheric, and I know it sounds funny, but I find it so much nicer to go back in time. Those days seem somehow better. It's crazy. I'm not sure I can handle the current situation, but you make the stories during the Cold War come alive, and this whole post World War II period where there were so many different forces pulling it in so many different directions, and all those strings have unraveled and raveled. And so this book, I thought, it's just very, there's a lot of also cleverness in it, I think.
Oh, thank you. That's kind of you to say. I'm a sucker for period movies and stories. So The Third Man, of course, set in the Vienna that we both love. Eric Ambler espionage stories, if you know those. In my work, I tend to become obsessed with things that are between the lines. So there's always these underdogs who are caught between cultures, or, you know, caught between the front lines. In this case, literally, we have the Iron Curtain. In the case of the espionage writer, Eric Ambler, everyone's not a super spy or a specialist. They're amateurs, kind of in over their head, and they make it up as they go along. And that's, if there's any theme in all my work, it's that. And I think it really fits for the Cold War period, because there's a lot of gray areas.
Exactly. And it is the sort of everyday person that makes the story so interesting, because people are all messed up in this world. And when just you get that feeling with your stories, that really, like, there's a word I didn't want to use it online, but it's just the people, you say, what, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? What are you doing? I'm thinking about Vienna and my own trips to Vienna when I was studying and working there and doing research. I had the same feeling, though. There were many times, and this was, you know, many years later, of course, not, you know, not after the war, but there's still that element of a lot of things going on in Vienna. So I had that same feeling that you've captured in your books.
Yeah, I mean, Vienna's perfect because it's sort of, you know, caught in the middle of everything, caught in the middle of history. It used to be an empire. It was, you know, separated in those four allied sectors until the mid-50s. So it's right at kind of the edge of Eastern Europe. So, what a great city.
I used to love the Hilton Hotel, the spiral stairs in the Hilton Hotel.
I did not check that out. I should have. There's so many nooks and crannies and lobbies and everything to check out.
you get that atmosphere in Vienna even today, because there are so many people from different countries hanging around the lobbies of hotels. So you capture that, though, and this idea of the brothers, one raised in America and one raised in Germany, and then bringing them together, this whole series, it's a difficult subject, but I find it a fun read.
Oh, thank you. I try to get in some period language and slang and things, and I try not to overdo it, but I hope that kind of lightens things a little bit sometimes. And there's a little bit of humor, too, because the brothers like to goad each other. They're sort of different. You know, Max is more casual and wants to live a good life. Like I said, I kind of think of him sort of as an Austrian. Like he likes to, he's sort of cosmopolitan. And he loves music and that kind of thing. And doesn't want to do anything that is too sad or, you know, too grueling. Whereas Harry, he thinks of himself as an American, but he's ironically kind of that stereotypical Prussian German who's very focused and headstrong. And even though he wouldn't admit it, so they kind of go at each other that way.
You have a lot of interesting characters, as I said, you know, because it is so international. You have Americans, you have Israelis, you have a wide range of characters. Tell us a little about Katerina.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, because I have to always mention Katerina. She's sort of the through line in Harry's story. She's like a lot of female characters in my books. This is probably true in real life as well. She's always a little bit smarter than them. She knows the right thing to do immediately. She's a former star of stage and screen in Nazi Germany. And so that all ended. She's might be like what someone like Marlene Dietrich herself or others would have ended up if they would have stayed. And so she's now at this point in the story with Lines of Deception, she's trying to make up for what her country did during the war, and she's working for the Israelis as an assassin. I can't go too far with that much away.
But, don't give it away.
She's found that her skills as an actress and on the stage kind of transfer over real nicely to this sort of espionage, which is, by the way, something that Max has unfortunately found out, and he's kind of accepted it as part of his fate that, you know, if the CIA wants him to do a thing or two once in a while, he's indebted to them and to Harry, and so he'll use those skills when needed. But yeah, Katerina is I love the character. I would love to just do a Katerina book, you know, but we'll see.
I think it would work, because she is fascinating. When a character really sometimes takes over part of a book, you feel it. And you definitely get that feeling with Katerina in this book and the other books, too. I didn't mention that, of course, you were a Fulbright fellow. I think that's how you got to Germany, right, as doing research at the time.
Yeah, it goes back a little bit. The first time I was there, I was in, have you ever been to Tübingen, Germany? Beautiful, medieval university town. I was there for a language, everyone should visit, it's beautiful. I was there for a language program, that's where I really got interested in German. As a real naive undergrad, grew up in a suburb of Portland where I live now, and that was my first experience. I went back in 1990 because history was happening, and I was in my backpacker phase at that time, just out of college. I can talk, if there's time, I can talk about that because it relates to
Deception. I love that phase of life I went through. Talk about it.
This is part of my research, I think. I met some people smarter than me who told me, don't try to get a career right away or go to grad school or what have you, go and live life. And I was a history undergrad, and I looked around at the world, and the Berlin Wall had just come down. And so I saved my money and resolved to go to Europe and travel as long as I could, and with the intention of going to Eastern Europe for as much as I could. And so I did that, and it was fantastic. I ventured into East Berlin, Prague, Krakow, Poland, and also the Auschwitz camps, Budapest, Slovenia, the Croatian coast. And it's weird to look back because I wanted to see history before it went away and all that. And it was truly another world. I mean, most of it could have been 1955. There was no Western advertising. I must have looked like an alien to some people. And I was, it's amazing now how off the grid I was, you know, I could have disappeared and no one would have known the wiser. But I think that experience, oddly, somewhere in the back of my head, informed the route that Max takes in pursuit of Harry in this book. Because in Lines of Deception, Max travels to the East Soviet Vienna, he goes to Soviet Prague, East Germany, Communist Poland. So that was definitely kind of a parallel there that I almost got to retrace my steps in a way, if that makes sense.
No, it does. I love it because I was, when I was young, I did something similar. And even now, when I think about it, when you look back at going to Poland, during the, you know, just after the Russians left, you know, were finally pushed out, it was a strange place. It was just, for an American, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, very intimidating, even though, you know, when I was in East Berlin, it was the spring of 1990, and it was kind of a foregone conclusion that East Germany was going to eventually get reunited, but they still looked very badass, for lack of a better term, all the border guards and, you know, all the controls and things like that. And I remember them, ironically, as being much nicer than the West German border guards. But it was a fascinating time, you know, going back to what you were saying about, it's hard to imagine the things they are like now. Back then, everyone thought the world was going to be vastly different. And it turns out that human nature kind of makes things not as great as everyone hoped, I think.
Well, I guess we don't learn from history because...
Yeah.
It blows my mind to think of it when you see the destruction, when you see the buildings and you see, you know, the first time I visited East Germany and also Poland, you know, there were still buildings that had been damaged, you know, during World War II. And then they were just getting out of it. You know, they were just rebuilding and doing everything. And now this comes along. So, but I think what will happen with this book, I think Lines of Deception is so well written and it's so intriguing that it will, in a way, sort of people will say, wow, you know, this is a good read. I needed to know some of this stuff. It puts a little bit into perspective that area of the world, which is so vital and so important to everything that's happening in this world. And to understand, when you talk about deception, I guess that's the key, isn't it?
I think so, without giving it anything away. It does definitely plays into the story a few times over. And that's very kind of you to say about the book. I appreciate it. I put everything into these and try not to let the research kind of overcome the story. I try to let the research serve the story. So I hope I'm doing that.
It does. It creates the atmosphere. Now, so you hadn't originally planned to be a novelist and that just sort of happened? How did that happen? You wrote
your
first book.
Question.
It took a little time before the first book was done?
So I did this Fulbright research fellowship in 93, 94 for a year, and I was researching my master's. Thought I was going to get a PhD in history. No thoughts of writing fiction. But a few years later, I revisited my MA thesis, which was on plundering and corruption in the very early U.S. occupation of Germany. And again, this is that between the lines thing. I had read so many things in reports about, you know, such and such did this and such happened, but it never really clarified what actually happened. And I thought, oh, this between the lines stuff is great for fiction. I could make stuff up instead of having to report things with big gaps in it. That led to my very first manuscript, which I can now say to the world was a pile of crap, as they usually are. But ironically, that first manuscript, I kept reworking it over the years, and in a much different form ended up as Liberated, the second book in this series. And I did not understand at that point that the main character of that book was Max's brother. It was only as I started building these stories that I had this light bulb moment where I realized, oh, these two guys are brothers. They're German Americans.
Oh, it's so exciting when this happens, when you start writing. And then why I named this program Joy on Paper is you do find this joy on paper that you see your words and you know that what you want to say, and then you keep working them over. And people sometimes will say, well, you know, I don't know if I can do that, you know, but that is a great, it's such a learning experience to rewrite and to just keep working it until one day it just sort of clicks on you, as this did with you, that, wow, I've got two brothers here. Boy, oh boy, I can do something with them.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I never would have found that out unless I rewrote over, you know, years, putting them down, working on something else, trying. It's with fiction, you know, you really do have to learn as you go along, and it's a cliche, but it's the good stuff's all in the rewriting. That's where it comes out. You know, when, as you might know, once your fingers start knowing what the character is going to do next without you having to think about it, that's a really wonderful state to be in.
Oh, it is. When they take over, when the character takes over your life, it's fantastic. It is more than making a new friend. It's making somebody who doesn't leave you alone sometimes.
Yeah, that is very true. but I actually wanted to add another thing about the research, just because I'm so indebted to my parents. I was lucky enough to have much older parents, and I was the youngest of four, and they were from the World War II era, and they had this basement full of all this memorabilia they kept Collier's magazines and stuff that you don't know about today. And that, I think, originally sparked my interest that came through later in the research.
And the research is so much fun. That is one of the best things about becoming a writer is the research. Now, of course, the problem always comes to getting an agent. well, more so, of course, in the time when you started, because your first book was published, what year was that? I don't remember.
The Losing Role, I put out myself in 2010 originally, in the early days of, you know, the Kindle and all that. But I, meanwhile, had finally, after many starts and stops, landed my current agent, who I can't say enough about. You know him. He's a brilliant and intrepid Peter Riva, who's been on your show also. And
yes.
Peter's been great. He understands what I do and the stories I'm trying to tell. And so he eventually found a way to get these books out, and then the series re-released with my new publisher, Open Road, and who's now putting out Lines of Deception. So, I can't say enough about Peter.
Well, I think Peter is worth his weight in gold, because he is so good, and when he must have, when he started reading these, been reminded, as I was, of course, of his grandmother, Marlene Dietrich, because she was an important part of my life, all of my life, from the time I was a child, from the time we My father would talk always about that meeting, about the day he saw her. And she was, you know, she was very brave, such a brave woman. No other performer. And that's why I think the losing role was so interesting, because we have an actor there. And of course, she was such a great actress, but she went right to the front. She went right out there to sing to the American soldiers and to just give them that moment. When you think about it, and I come from northern Michigan, my father was a lumberman. And so for him, walking through the forest in the middle of the winter, he was looking at the trees. He was studying the trees. And he was thinking about how when he got back to northern Michigan, he was really already thinking about the importance of trees as something that we have to preserve, that we have to keep. And he remembered that day when she, you know, she was in the back of a Jeep, and she stood up and took off her helmet, and her beautiful hair came, you know. He remembered that all of his life. He would talk about it. The Battle of the Bulge, I think, is also something that when people read The Losing Role, they might think about it and maybe appreciate more what our American soldiers did and what somebody great like Marlene Dietrich did during the war. So there's just so many wonderful things about your books. I love them all. I think you can start with this one, and then, you know, Lines of Deception, they stand alone, so you can start with one and then go back and dig out the rest of the story. You've done a beautiful job, Steve, with this, and I'm very happy that you know, we had a chance to talk. You know, I always see stories, if I really love a story, I see it as a film in my head, and I saw from The Losing Role. Now, I had read that long before I, you know, years before, because I have 200 books about Napoleon and another 200 books about the Battle of the Bulge. I have everything ever written about Eisenhower, Omar Bradley, who my father loved. We had this wonderful connection here of Peter Riva sending you to me. But I'm hoping that this is a kind of story that... you have now enough books in the series that somebody has to pick it up and do a streaming series on the Casper brothers. I would love it.
That would be fantastic. And I do hope someone's listening. It's interesting what you say about the trees, because I think that's maybe subconsciously part of my work too, because there's a lot of trees. And it's partially because, like northern Michigan, I live in Oregon, and I'm in the green part of Oregon and surrounded by forests, even in the city. So I know what you mean there. And it does hopefully create some wonderful visuals.
It does. Well, I have to let you go now. But Steve, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. It's Steve Anderson, Lines of Deception. And, of course, you have a website. And Steve?
There's many Steve Andersons.
I was going to say that.
It's it's my full name. It's Stephen with a PH, F as in Frederick, Anderson. So StephenFAnderson.com. Okay. And there's a newsletter on there that if people want to get updates about my work. I just learned that there's an audiobook of Lines of Deception coming too. So that's pretty exciting. But Lines of Deception has been released just today. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Yeah, today's a release date. That's what I love to do. That's why I started this program on a Tuesday, and I didn't know at that time that that's when most books were released. So it worked out fine. So today is a release date, and so I'm so happy that you were on Joy on Paper today. Lines of Deception by Steve Anderson. It's a great book. Everybody get it, and I think you'll enjoy it, because I predict that this is going to be a streaming series one day on one of the streaming services. Okay, Steve?
That's so kind of you. Sounds good. It's a great pleasure to be on your show. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's been a joy to talk to you. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye. Take care.
Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye now.